And so I think it's easy, maybe too easy, to dismiss that and say, oh, that's a job hopper. I don't want one of the job hoppers. When the truth is, it's just happening. And so if that's the pattern, you know, why sit there and blame that employee and instead earn their loyalty?
Welcome back to Riding the Big Wheel. Today we're talking with professional career coach, Scott Doyne. Scott works with individuals to reach their full potential and to realize their personal and professional dreams. Today we're going to talk about how you can reach your next level potential and fully realize the optimal level of satisfaction in your personal and professional journey of life. Scott has an extensive background in the sports industry, and we're also going to talk about women in sports, the past, present, and future, and in his various roles, the insight he has in working with and for female and male leadership. Hey, Scott, welcome to our podcast today.
Thanks so much, Michelle. It's great to be here with you.
I am really happy that you agreed to be part of the podcast. Now, we met because I recently had re-engaged at Emory University, and there was an event that you were attending, and I reached out to you, and you so graciously responded back.
I go to that event every year. I think I've been 15 years since I graduated with my MBA from there. I'm now teaching there. I do some coaching there. It's a special place to me that really helped me catapult my career to the next level, and then getting to engage with other judges like yourself, it's just a wonderful annual opportunity.
And for anyone listening, we're talking about, of course, for us anyway, it's called Emory Goizueta Impact. So it's a program for the graduate students where they are bringing forward real case studies, and we get to judge. So a problem has been posed by a company out in the community, and we get to judge those. And I had so much fun. And the reason I wanted to bring that up is because just as something for our listeners, Scott, I'd gotten very busy in my career. So years ago, I mean, I'm talking probably 15 years it had been, I was involved with Emory pretty extensively, and I really enjoyed my time. And I stepped back because of my, own commitments to my career and to family. But I got to tell you, I recently stepped back in, and boy, it was as if I had not left. So it's such a welcoming community of people. But secondly, I have to encourage people not to step out, but maybe just step around a little bit, because I realize how much I miss that community and how much it really means to me personally as well as professionally.
Yeah, it really is a community, whether it's the faculty, the staff, the students, those projects. I actually participated in that competition when I was a student.
Oh,
and so I do like to give back. But that immersion in community, when we're talking about careers, which is what I do most days with people, it's a version of networking and hopefully a version that people are comfortable with, where I think service can be selfless, but service can also be selfish. When you're there contributing to that community, giving something back, there's also something you get in return. And I would never say I do it as a quid pro quo, but for people that want to get out there, I invited some of my clients to join me at that event. And we had some good conversations, and they met some other people. And one thing leads to another. You just don't know if you're willing to sort of, get in the pool.
That's so great. Well, I will say that I met a few women, and I was so excited because I met a couple of women in AI technology and was invited to a dinner with others and one who had actually developed an app. So it was so much fun to open those doors. And since I've had dinner with a couple of other women as well that have been very, very satisfactory for me personally in my life. And I just enjoyed the conversation and being able to just talk with other women in business.
Completely. So. And I think with the trend of more people working from home and more people being entrepreneurs, that can get lonely.
Yeah.
And I found the need to push myself a little bit from time to time. And I think that's been positive. I don't love driving in Atlanta traffic.
Yeah.
But if I can avoid the rush hours, you know, getting out there, having coffee with people, having a lunch every now and again, getting out of the basement, it's all upside.
It makes a big difference. So, Scott, why don't we talk and tell everyone a little bit about you? So there was a reason that I saw you out. I think you've got a fantastic background that I would love for people to understand, and talk about a little bit your career journey and what brought you to what it is that you do today.
Yeah, it's tough to do quickly, but because I'm so fortunate. I really had the luckiest career anybody could have. I worked in sports for 25 years, and to a degree, I still work in sports because I work with people that want to work in sports, and I try to help them make that happen. For me, it started out as being a sports fan, like a lot of people, and then I discovered an undergraduate program at University of Michigan in sports management. So early on, there weren't a lot of programs like that. I got involved in sports television, had some internships, and then through business school, I finally made my way into Turner Sports, and that's really where I spent the majority of my career, 20 years. I'm really proud of it. I had so much fun, so many great colleagues. I worked in product management, analytics, digital business management, business development strategy. You really just got to do so much fun work with so many great people.
That's wonderful. So let's talk a little bit about... Let's talk about Turner, and then let's talk about what you're doing now, which we have to admit, right, Turner is now Warner Brothers Discovery.
Right?
Discovery, so it's got a new name. But let's talk a little bit about that, because as a career coach, you and I had a conversation about leaders and leadership, and we were talking about, you know, I think that the culture, let's call it the Turner culture, is very interesting. So I was explaining to you that I just met... my daughter's boyfriend. I hope she doesn't mind, or they don't mind I'm mentioning him, but he's working at Turner right now as a videographer, and he's working with TCM, Turner Classic Movies, right now. And I was telling him about my podcast with you, and that, you know, we were going to be talking about women in leadership and others in leadership. And he was telling me, as a young man, right, so you're someone that's more advanced in your career, and this is as a young man in his early 20s, he's like, I have to say, I have never worked with better leadership and managers. And he said, you know, there are a lot of great women in management there. So I want to talk a little bit about the styles, the, you know, of management and leadership style that you've seen, a little bit about the culture of Turner, and how Ted Turner actually, you know, shaped that. I mean, he's just a legacy in Atlanta, as we all know. Yeah. But something about him has permeated through, and how do you make that kind of mark?
I wish I knew how it all started, but it, you know, Ted was special, and I love his autobiography, Ted, and you know, there's people I know that worked with him and for him. I didn't get to work closely with him, but saw him around campus once and saw him at his restaurant once, and he just leaves that legacy, like you said. And I think if I had to pick one word that maybe translates, it's innovation. Hmm. You know, launching the first 24-hour cable news network, launching all these other networks, launching a kids network, right? That all came through his tenure. When I got there, we were launching digital properties. I worked on CNN Digital. NASCAR.com was the first property I worked on.
Wow.
Worked on NBA, March Madness. And, you know, all of that was what I would say is ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. We were doing it as early, if not earliest, than anybody in the industry. And so I think that translates when it comes to leadership and culture and fostering female talent even, because the way to be innovative is to hear from different voices.
Yep.
Right? Lots of ideas, filtered, debated with candor, trial and error. Hmm. And those ideas have to come from more than just old white guys, or else we're not satisfying the audience. Is part of how we think about the marketing of everything we do in media is it's about the eyeballs and the motivation and what they're looking for. And so I think there's some innovative respect that comes out of that very tangibly. in my tenure, you know, we just had leaders that respected everybody. Wow, that's what great. I'm fortunate to have worked mm-hmm. under, you know, whether it was men or women. I just think they respected good ideas. They respected people's talents, even if they were different than the next person.
Yeah.
And that, you know, again, I had a very fortunate career to be working with people like that.
That's really great. So you would say one strong attribute of good leadership is showing that level of respect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, I can't speak for everybody. If you're respected, if you feel heard, mm-hmm. you're more likely to say something.
Yeah.
And not keep those ideas to yourself. You might think they're crazy, but I had bosses who weren't happy unless you were proposing crazy ideas. And so it pushed me even to sort of come up with another scale of what my boss would find interesting. And so I think that respect is part of that, is new ideas from new people, fresh perspectives all the time.
So let's shift and talk about what you're doing now and how you got into career coaching. I see the passion and the love that you have for it. And I'd love you to just talk about, because we're going to talk about career yeah. progression. So you made a decision yeah. and kind of how did you get to where you are today?
Thank you that you noticed that I'm passionate about it.
Yeah.
I really do believe it's a calling. Mm-hmm. The fact that I got to work in sports for that many years and now get to do something else that I love doing. Again, very fortunate. The way it happened, I'll start by ripping off a Band-Aid.
Okay.
I did get laid off from Warner Brothers Discovery. But about 10 months before that, I had an inkling. Mm-hmm. And this was post-pandemic, when I think a lot of us were very introspective. Yeah. And I was thinking about some of those big words as I get older, like purpose and legacy. And I think all that sort of happened at the same time, where it's like, okay, if I were to be let go, what might I want to do? And so I began journaling, was my first step. And I think that created some open-mindedness about what that might be. I was still very committed to my job, my team, the company. I did not want to leave. But if it were going to happen, I was trying to give myself the same advice I'd give somebody else, is be prepared. And so the journaling then coincided with an experience with an executive coach. A lot of the executives got paired up with a coach. It was volunteer. You didn't have to, but I said, sure, why not? And I had a couple of those sessions. And in those sessions, I was like, oh my God, that was something. Like I saw something, I heard something in myself. I was able to articulate something different just by bouncing things around with a coach. And the second thing was, I think I could do that. And it really, you know, in retrospect and talking to people that have known me for a while, they see that in my previous management style. I really did care about professional development. I cared about mentoring. I cared about working with younger employees. That was always part of how I managed.
Yeah.
And so the transition was maybe more obvious for others than it was for me. But once I had that light bulb, I started some training. And then I was working my way towards certification when I did get laid off. But at that point, I was ready. Like, this is what I was going to do, because I was loving it more every step of the way.
So now you made a transition from corporate mm-hmm. as an executive to now you're a single shingle, all out on your own.
100%.
So talk to me a little bit about, because I've done that too.
Yeah.
But let's talk to me a little bit about, like, what that was like, what your feelings were like, and then how do you actually get clients?
Yeah, I was, I say nervous, excited.
Yeah.
Which I love that combination, because if, you know, if you're not a little nervous, mm-hmm. then maybe I'm not pushing myself. Mm-hmm. And I certainly have grown up as, you know, someone who likes to achieve and be seen as an achiever. And so I still had that intrinsic motivation to accomplish something. I wasn't retiring. But luckily I found this thing. And so getting organized, I did my research. I got some materials together. I have a product management background. And so I very much lean on the concept of MVP, minimum viable product. Mm-hmm. And some people will say that that's like the good enough version and think of it as a negative. And I think of it as the right thing to do for the business, mm-hmm. because getting something to the point where you can launch it and get meaningful feedback, that feedback, that analysis, that research will help you make it better if you're listening. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I launched my business in March of 23. I had been laid off in November of 22. So about 5 more months of that sort of certification and research and being ready. And I launched on LinkedIn. Didn't have a website yet. I didn't feel like that was necessary to sort of get enough out there. And so I was prepared to launch on LinkedIn. I was not prepared for the response. I was blown away.
Wow.
The messages I got, I filled my calendar for 2 months with trials. Yep. You know, my method is to have 20-minute free calls with anybody. And I think that's important because I'm not the right coach for everybody. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know what coaching is. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to be part of that first call to see if there's a match.
Yep.
And at the very least, maybe I help them think about something different. Maybe they just understand what coaching is and go find the right one for them. But I do those free calls. And so that's been my process now for a year and a half is free trials. Mm-hmm. And then if there's a match, then we have a partnership. And so that's where my clients come from.
So let's talk about what coaching is. You talk about professional career coaching, personal coaching, I think. Mm-hmm. And then how does that differ from, because they are very different, counseling, right? Yeah. For people that aren't familiar, like what is
that? That's a great question. Yeah, I went through a lot of training, through the International Coaching Federation certification process. It's very rigorous. Mm-hmm. I took 16 classes on Wednesday nights, 3 hours each. Wow. I had to conduct 100 hours of coaching. I had to do peer coaching. I had to get mentors from the coaching profession to listen to my sessions. I had to submit a recording that was approved by the ICF. All of which then unlocked a 3-hour exam, which was like the hardest test I've taken in my life. That I think is like meant
even
to trick
harder
you.
Harder than Emory?
It was so hard.
Oh my gosh.
And it had been 20 years since I'd taken a test. But I got a good enough score on it to get certified. And that to me was the beginning of my understanding of coaching. Through that mm-hmm. training, we did talk about the difference between consulting, coaching, mentoring, mm-hmm. counseling. Mm-hmm. Coaching, as it's defined by the ICF, is not advice. It's not telling people what to do or how to do it. It's being a partner in the process mm-hmm. and helping people explore what they want to do and then build a plan with them for how to accomplish that. And I really believe in this, and it really has been my management style, which I would call empowerment. Mm-hmm. Advice, you know, Michael Bungay Steiner is a famous coach and author that wrote a book called The Advice Trap. Okay. And advice can be a Band-Aid. And it's a natural inclination to ask for it. It's a natural inclination to give it. People want to be helpful. But what that person is, you know, that you're giving advice to is not you. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we might have a chance of understanding our own motivations best. But understanding somebody else's motivation and what's right for them, telling them what to do might actually be a disservice. Hmm. And it might be that Band-Aid versus creating frameworks, exercises, asking good questions to let them discover that for themselves and develop an approach that suits them. Yeah. And that, to me, is a lifelong skill. Where I don't want to be a crutch for people. That's not my goal, is to have people as clients talking about the same thing month after month after month. You know, hopefully they make a breakthrough and we move on to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing.
Wow, that's just very interesting. And I hadn't heard it described like that. So let's talk about your clients that you coach. I specifically had wanted to talk to you about people that were women, right? Because we talked about men versus mm-hmm. women. And it'll be interesting, maybe a little contrast and compare if it applies. But like I was asking you about a woman who, let's say, wants to make a career transition. And it could be stepping up into that next big job mm-hmm. and the considerations around that. It could be stepping over into a whole new field, which is probably a whole different you know, set of considerations, or if they're stepping out, let's say, making a hard decision to retire, or maybe even should I retire or not, or or should I stay home for a few years or not, or, you know, there's like all different dynamics. So maybe each one of them are different, but I was curious to understand from your perspective, women in particular, what are some of the biggest challenges they have with, you know, that is there a trend in things that might be holding them back, or their biggest considerations when they come to you? And how do you help them think about that?
Yeah, I think there's different hurdles for everybody. And I don't say that as a cop out. It's more with one-on-one coaching.
Yep.
What I love about it is treating people as individuals and understanding them, what they want, their motivations, their aspirations. Yep. And that's, you know, that's at the human level. That's not gender specific. It's not age specific. It's just, you know, that person, what is it they want to accomplish? And getting to that, you know, might be quick. It might take some time. But when I think about the women I'm working with today, and you had mentioned a word, stuck.
Yeah.
And I do hear that word a lot. I heard the word lost a lot. When I hear stuck, there's a few varieties, I'd say. One is I'm stuck under a manager that maybe isn't an advocate. And maybe that is hampering that person's personal growth, professional growth, and what they might accomplish in that existing situation. So I hear that a lot. It's heartbreaking, but you know, there's some great managers, and there's people that maybe haven't been trained by great managers.
Yeah.
And so I don't fault people, but that is a common situation, is, you know, people are very respectful of their manager and don't feel like they can move beyond them if they're not an advocate for their career. So I think that's really important.
Wow.
The other stuck is more on the life side. So, you know, I think it's fair to say, I don't love to generalize, but, you know, women and motherhood, women and unconscious bias they encounter, maybe more conscious bias that they encounter. This is what I hear from my clients. It's what I heard from my staff and coworkers. We had a program at Turner talking about the culture again called Headwinds. And every VP and above in the whole company went to this to better understand these concepts of what different people deal with. And this was in particular about women in the workplace. And so, of course, it's eye-opening because I haven't walked in those shoes. And this was probably 10 years ago now at this point. And I think every step of the way, if men can better understand what the female perspective and the female experience is in the workplace, there'll be more awareness. I think there'll be more empathy, and hopefully there'll also be more support. And so that stuck part, whether it's your manager or somebody else, working in the sports business, working in the technology area, working in sports technology, right? These are areas that traditionally have not seen a lot of success for women in executive positions. At my company, there was. But I still heard things like, I have two jobs. One, to make sure I'm heard. And two, to actually do my job. And so that's sort of stuff. It's tough to hear, but it's real, you know. And I think you sit on Zooms and start to pay attention to it and watch who's talking and when and how they're talking. And another program at Turner I was in was called Circle Mentoring. And I was fortunate to be invited into this. It was part of the employee resource group, Turner Women. And I was a co-mentor with a female executive. And we had 10 women a year for about 6 or 7 years come through that we would mentor. And they'd hear from us and they'd learn from each other. And, you know, time after time, this thought of like, well, I mentioned an idea in a meeting and then some dude took credit for it and people heard him better than they heard me.
That has happened to me in the past.
And until I heard these stories, I wouldn't have known. And I think, you know, I'm not going to give an excuse of unconscious bias, but the definition is being not conscious of it. And so being invited into that room mm-hmm. where I could hear the differences, women applying for jobs when they only feel like they have 100% of the qualifications.
Yeah.
This is what I heard. And so I believe them, and it's not like I'm there to fix it, mm-hmm. but you know, I had a client last week that was asking about how they could have influence over getting more headcount. Mm-hmm. And we had an exercise we actually developed back then in Circle Mentoring called influence mapping. And just sort of talking about that game, if you will, of how to navigate, you know, anything other than that straight line from A to B.
Yeah.
Because right. I wish it were that easy in corporate America. It's not. And I look back on it, it's like, oh my God, that's exhausting. But if you want to navigate successfully, you need allies, you need advocates, you need champions. And talking somebody through that for the first time the other day, they were like, I had no idea.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, do you think that men in general, maybe because they've been at it longer too, if we're mm-hmm. if we think about it in leadership and corporate, do you think that they tend to do that better or it's easier for them?
That's a tough one. What do you think?
Well,
I know you asked the questions here, but I'm a coach, so I ask questions.
I think it's good. Well, personally, I think that women, I think they have a couple of advantages that I've seen. That then I tell people here, if I have only one superpower, if there's only one, I do think I've been blessed with very strong listening and interpretation skills. But I think a lot of women have that. And I'm not to say that a lot of men don't, but I think that in my observations, women seem to be really good at that. And so I think that they can actually navigate and negotiate better. Now, I've
the
heard
intuition,
that women are
that
afraid.
Intuitiveness. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It goes down to that. Now, I'll tell you an example, and then I want to hear. Because we happen to have, I'm COO of a company called Sales Globe, and it's about sales effectiveness consulting, right? So it's B2B, it's salespeople. And what we hear time and time again, inside sales, the most effective inside salespeople are women. And they say, the results are, they ask better questions, and they're able to listen better and really interpret what the needs are of the person they're talking mm-hmm. with. And they sometimes tend to be more conversational. So I would be interested to hear your perspective, because I also hear that women aren't as bold, right? So if my idea isn't heard as a younger woman, that has happened to me, but someone might repeat it who was, I kind of faulted myself for my lack of having that maturity in being assertive enough at the time. I'm a little older, a little more tenured now. I don't seem to have that, mm-hmm. that as much mm-hmm. of an issue. And yeah. I do coach my daughters on that.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
I love that you brought up asking questions as a superpower. Yeah. This is what I've come to appreciate most mm-hmm. from coaching and the training that I've gotten. I thought I was a decent listener. Hmm. I really wasn't anything compared to the skills I've been trained for now. And I'm still just getting started, right? This is just a couple years into this new path where, you know, I backtrack a little and realize, you know, I did work in sports TV production to some degree, asking questions as a journalist.
Yeah.
I did run a research department where asking questions was important. And so coming into coaching, asking questions is natural. But that advice trap can happen. Mm-hmm. And so I'm remembering a situation I had with a female employee, a millennial female employee, and I was struggling, you know, to sort of connect and find that, you know, path forward together. And I asked one of my former colleagues, a female colleague that I had really respected, you know, how do I break through? Like, what can I do? Because I wanted to. And she said, ask questions, ask what she thinks, ask her opinion on things. And it changed everything. And I think it's so simple, but I didn't have the discipline, I'll say. I don't think I had the discipline to use that skill mm-hmm. as much as now I do on a regular basis. My family hears it too. You know, my daughter just went through a college selection process, and I think being able to let her navigate in her own way by asking her good questions about what she wanted and why, and, you know, how might she go about researching that? You know, I'm really excited for the decision she made. And as a parent, you know, that's hard. At this stage for an 18-year-old, and let them make such an important decision. But I think it's critical, you know, again, with the empowerment, it's their life. They should have a say, and we'll always be there for support. And I'm sure I'll fall back into a habit of giving advice from time to time. But I think if you're good at asking questions, heck yeah, that's a superpower.
So let me flip you. You mentioned when you're talking about coaching, how some people get stuck under a, you know, working for a manager that might not be their advocate or may not even realize it, right? But how do you, what advice, here I am asking for advice, yeah, even though you're a coach, but I'm going to, what have you observed, let's say, in really good leaders and managers that are able to stay in touch with their team? Because I have to, if I give the benefit of the doubt, maybe sometimes it's not even intentional, right? And it comes as a surprise. So what is it that you've seen good leaders do to really keep their hand on the pulse of their team, knowing that, I mean, especially in today's day and age, I hear more and more about companies that are operating, you know, with maybe not as much staff as they would prefer, right? So we're in a lean time right now in our economy, I would say, and I've seen that globally. So how do they stay in touch with their team? And then we'll talk about, we'll segue into virtual, but how do they just make sure they're keeping their hand on the pulse and understanding how they can focus on the development of their team as well?
In most companies, there's some sort of goal setting process, I hope. If not, I don't know how anybody knows if they've hit a single, double, triple, or home run, right? You don't know where the end zone is. And I'll use sports metaphors forever, by the way. And so I think in the goal setting process, there's an opportunity for the manager, for the employee. At Turner, the process was very employee driven. So you did have to document what you wanted to accomplish, what you wanted to be your goals. And the manager had an opportunity to give feedback. When I was managing folks, I guided folks towards four goals per year. And the first three were very role oriented. You know, how do you get your job done? How do you quantify that, right? SMART goals, if you haven't heard of those, right? I really use those a lot. But the fourth goal was professional development. And hopefully open people's eyes to an honest conversation about what you might want to accomplish someday. And if you can get to that conversation, and somebody, let's say, you know, I had a staff person really want to work on podcasts. Look at us now. And so finding a way to make that part of their role was very valuable in the managerial process of earning somebody's trust, respect, right? Respect goes both ways. And it opened the door to the employee genuinely feeling like their manager was invested in their future. And I think that's critical. Yes, people have jobs and there's stuff you got to get done. But at least in the industry I was in, the future was unknown, right? There's a lot of change in a lot of industries. And I don't think it's fair for the company to say they know what they should do next, right? There may be a strategy, but if there's room for that innovation, why not let the employee dictate some portion of their role towards something they're interested in that might be part of their future career and might help the company succeed? And so I think that's where it can start in the goal setting process, just to give one example.
That's very wise. So one of the things that I think would be interesting to hear your perspective on, you know, a lot of people, younger people in particular, they change jobs frequently, meaning companies, right? The days of the, although I still work with a lot of people in the sales world, in our consulting, that have been with a company for 20 years, 25 years. And, you know, it's almost like there's a belief that the company doesn't really want you there that long or, rewards that type of behavior. I personally love the idea of having long tenure employees with short tenure employees, you know, like getting that mix in there. But I love the people that stay and become part of the mission and vision. I don't think they have to become, you know, too entrenched in one way of thinking, which a lot of people think that. I'd love to hear what your perspective is just on work in general and tenure.
It's absolutely happened. As I was hiring people later in my career, the amount of resumes you see with people having worked at four jobs and four companies over 10 years is very common. And so I think it's easy, maybe too easy, to dismiss that and say, oh, that's a job hopper. I don't want one of the job hoppers. When the truth is, it's just happening.
Yeah.
And so if that's the pattern, you know, why sit there and blame that employee and instead earn their loyalty? And I'm idealistic. I'm absolutely an optimist. Like, that's just how I wake up in the morning, and it's probably annoying. But I feel like it's the manager's responsibility to earn it. Not everybody feels that way. They feel like there's some entitlement from the younger generation. I just never saw it that way. I saw it as ambition. I saw it as wanting to make an impact. And yeah, it might come off as impatient, and they might not know how to communicate that in the right way in a corporate environment quite yet. But I think you can leave some room for that, because what you have on your hands, if you can harness it, is somebody that wants to work hard, make an impact, and do things maybe differently than have been done before, which I think is the right answer. Doing things the same way you've always done them before is the only thing you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
When you are required to grow the business in a challenging industry.
That's really good advice, I think. When we think about the new demo, you know, the younger demographic coming in, who will be the future leader too. Okay, I want to talk about the pandemic, because I know people are sick and tired of talking about the pandemic, but the reality is, I believe we are going to have impacts on people and humans we have from very young to very aged for decades to come. And I don't even think we know half of what the outcomes of that, you know, we know some of the immediate, but I don't even think we know some of the long-term impacts. There were okay things that happened out of it and not okay things. And you and I had a conversation around pandemic impact. And I would, you know, I specifically want to talk about women and things that you had observed. And, you know, maybe it's the same for men and women, but it would be interesting to just hear your, you know, experience from your coaching experience and what people have to say about that. It was a very, very interesting time. I would not have minded if it was not part of me and my generation, to tell you the truth.
It's tough. It's but, really tough. You know, as an employee, as a manager, as a parent, no playbook.
No.
We had to just figure it out, and it was hard. Yeah. But I want to take this opportunity to talk about one of my bosses at that time, who was female. Because I had a lot of great bosses. I had several great female bosses. And to have a boss, male or female, this happened to be female, that was empathetic during the pandemic was life-changing. That, you know, that space that we all needed to sort of figure stuff out, she understood. That time where it sort of went up and down, where it's like, oh, I actually need the home time today, but I want to contribute to work tomorrow, right? There's some inconsistency there, at least for me, and unpredictability of like, okay, what am I taking care of today? And she just made room for that fluctuation. And, you know, you mentioned the intuition earlier, and I think empathy, I think a lot of female leaders got a chance to shine in a way that some of the male leaders during that time, maybe on average, it just isn't their style. And, you know, can you imagine having a boss during that time period that didn't want to understand what you were going through and give some space for that personally and professionally? That must have been really difficult. So I am incredibly thankful for the boss I had at that time. She is a phenomenal manager and leader at all times. But maybe what we saw a glimpse of is what might happen if we had more female CEOs. Because we don't, right? The numbers are the numbers. And I think it's probably in the data somewhere that there's an opportunity for greater success putting females in that position. And it was demonstrated during the pandemic.
That's great. That's, you know, for me, that's just very encouraging to hear. I like to say that I'm the counterbalance to my male partner here, because I think I probably am the empathetic one.
Just saying. And I should say, like, you know, my female bosses were completely across the spectrum in terms of their management styles.
Yeah.
One of the personality assessments I do with my team, I also do with my clients, which is a DISC assessment. I don't know if you've heard of that before, DISC.
Yes, we just started doing that here.
And I really like it because it sort of cuts through on that sort of attitudinal, psychological, how people approach things. And people are just different.
Yeah.
And I love having the combination of all of those when you're creating a team.
Yep.
But I had bosses that were very strong Ds for dominance. I had bosses that were more on the sort of I influence side. S I always call supportive. I'm a very strong S and I'm a very low D. And then what's the C one? C one is like the very structured, organized, control oriented. Yeah. And so I think you need all of those people to create a successful team. But the self-awareness that comes with knowing who you are, who your manager is, right? How they're going to approach things that might or might not be different than you. You know, that sort of I and S side is where I think that empathy happens. Mm-hmm. The D a little less, but I know a lot of Ds because they're overachievers who've trained themselves to bring out that other side, which I call situational leadership, adaptive leadership, right?
Interesting.
That people can evolve and bring in those muscles at the right time, even though their general inclination is still probably going to be about the same most of their career.
Huh. That's very interesting. So I'm glad you brought that up because we just made a decision. We use that as part of our hiring process because people have to be able to work in a team. And even if, you know, I'm not necessarily hiring to a personality style, but understanding how people engage and work with others. So we actually chose one of them that talks about working with a team environment. So I found that to be a really good assessment too. And I would encourage anyone.
Yeah. In alignment with each of those types with certain roles.
That's a good finance point.
And accounting is most likely going to be folks with a lot of the C.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean there isn't a need for collaboration and, you know, a sort of candor or take charge leadership style, right?
Yep.
That might bring in some of the other pieces. But your sales folks probably should have some eye, right? That they've got to be a bit more outgoing. They've got to be influential. That's the job. Yep. So I think it can be very valuable as an employee. The way I use it in coaching is for people to better understand that relationship with their manager. So that thing about being stuck, it's like, well, maybe if you sort of take personalities out of it, right, and take identity out of it, and just understand people's natural tendencies, maybe you can have an objective conversation about how you can be a team together using your complementary styles and skill sets.
That's great. Yep. So let's talk about now post-pandemic. We've entered an environment, I think this is really important. We've entered an environment of kind of a hybrid working world, right? And I know companies and leaders are still struggling with how many days in, how many days home, right? Mm-hmm. This whole thing around development, a whole thing around, you know, if you're not there, maybe your voice isn't heard as much, right? Now, we happen to be, transparently, we're 3 days in. pretty flexible with how that works. We were 2 days in, but highly collaborative organization. But the reality is my team has some freedom around that. So if everyone's head down in spreadsheets and they're going to be wearing their headsets, I tell them, I don't need you here, right? I need you here to be on whiteboards and collaborating and talking and sharing ideas, which today we had a lively discussion around AI and how we're leveraging that in our work. So how do you think about leaders that are now leading in this hybrid world? And what are the things that you think could be different than they were before? And how do we still make sure that, you know, I always think about the culture. You know, how do you keep your culture intact? Particularly in, you know, let's be frank, places like Atlanta where you have a push and pull. Some people really want to be in an office to collaborate, but others are like, do I really want to deal with that traffic? I just don't, you know, and they're not thinking about that other aspect. So I'd love to get your perspective on that and
what you've seen. I mean, talk about going through that time period where we all had to work from home. It was the only option for most people. Not everybody, there are frontline workers that were out there risking their lives.
Yep.
But for those of us that are more corporate types, you know, we had to learn to adapt and finding new skills. Because for me, I really do think I'm better in person with people. I think sitting down, walking around, stopping by a cube, right? I think there's some strength there that's what I had sort of learned and adapted to in my management style. Once that wasn't available to me, it was on me to figure out how to be effective.
Yeah.
Like that's my responsibility as a manager is to adapt, right? Use Slack a little more, call people, do the Zoom, do the social distancing, like pop by the house, which I did a couple of times.
Wow.
You know, just trying new things just to see what would work. Yeah. And I'm not sure I ever fully figured it out, but people did get used to it. I think that's, you know, just a fact. People got used to it. It got comfortable. I think the younger sort of new employee part of that was really difficult. We had a staff in New York and going to the office was part of their social life. Not to mention they live in tiny boxes in Manhattan. And so thinking about the geographic differences of people's experiences, I had staff in California and New York in between, adapting to that was important. So that was sort of back then, right? It happened. Some people learned to adapt. Some people just hated it. Some people loved it and never want to go back. So now we're in this situation still where there's this like a, you know, the hybrid thing is anything but defined. And I see a lot of struggles with it. I see people that want to have that flexibility where they can get some stuff done at home that they can't when they're at the office. I see people that miss the office terribly and love the social aspect of it. The marketing department couldn't wait to go back to the office.
Yeah.
My research department, arguably, I think, in fact, was more productive from home.
Very interesting.
It's their personality to actually prefer that environment. And I think they were more productive. But I think finding some balance is where we're at and knowing that, you know, whether it's 3 days a week or a certain amount during the month. I heard something from a client recently who's at a company that said during the year, there are 2 weeks, 2 full weeks you can work from somewhere else. And it was novel, right? Because now that week vacation you just took, maybe you can extend it a week and work from that location. And I thought that must have come through some listening or creativity or an idea that came from somewhere where it's like, okay, we want to give a little more flexibility. We want to respect this desire. But now you feel like the company cares about you. And talking about that job hopping a little bit, it's like, okay, is somebody maybe a little less likely to pick up that recruiter call? Maybe. And if your goal is to have an engaged, fulfilled, vibrant, productive staff, I think there has to be some level of flexibility. But FaceTime is still important, whether it's with clients or staff or internal colleagues that you're trying to do that influencing mapping with. So I think FaceTime is still important. It doesn't go away. Maybe as generations move through the workforce, some of this will shift. You know, we had technology departments and engineers who were remote forever. Mm-hmm. That was already part of our mix, so it wasn't terribly foreign. My wife has worked from home for 20 years and sort of figured it out before the rest of us and has been productive. So I think it's possible, but I don't want to be naive that there isn't something you miss by being in person with people.
So one of the things that I've discovered is that since the pandemic, I appreciate the FaceTime a lot more than I did before. So for example, you know, I've got to meet somebody for a coffee, let's say. And before it's like, oh, I got to leave. I got to go meet somebody for coffee. And now it's like, I get to meet somebody for coffee and I can't wait. There's something more that has, I guess the one gift I got from the pandemic, because I would say there were no gifts. But if I could say, it's that I appreciate the face-to-face and I'm really delighted and excited when I get to meet with people face-to-face.
Yeah.
More so than before.
Totally. And I remember, you know, just sort of coming out of it, those first few times we all got together.
Yes.
A little weird, but freaking great.
But great.
Like that we actually got to see people and at some point eventually like hug people, right? Really meaningful contact, right? That chemistry of being in person is inarguable.
Yeah.
So I feel that too. I try to get out of my basement. I'm a solopreneur and seeing people in person definitely energizes me.
You just reminded me. So during the pandemic, right? So it was that March. I'll never forget when we called offices closed, which I thought was interesting. It happened to be on a Friday, March 13th.
Friday the 13th.
Which is kind of weird, right? But anyway, my birthday is in April. And I remember I might have been one of the first recipients of this, but it was so fun. I cried. I had the whole drive-by birthday thing. So my friends and all coming by in their cars and honking the horns. And yeah, it was really sweet. It was, I will not wish for it to come back.
No.
But anyway, So tell me if we can summarize this topic a little bit. What do you think that leaders should be thinking about as they consider the future of work in a hybrid workforce, assuming that's where we're going?
Yeah, I think everything comes back to having the right people. I think it's about talent and talent management, full life cycle, recruiting, hiring, training, onboarding, developing, leadership training, even all the way to outplacement, which is something I do some of as well. Like that entire cycle is about the most important asset any company has is the people. And I don't know if it's that way in every company. I was in a company where that was true. And the chemistry, the collaboration, the respect, you know, finding a way to get the most out of that combination of people you had created the best business outcomes.
Yep.
And so if that's true, then it is all about the employee and managers adapting and leaders adapting and leaders listening. So going back to listening, asking questions, and being flexible, I think all of that, you know, it's clearly not the top-down approach that was taken for decades. And some of that still exists. It's just not what I believe in. I believe I was successful managing through empowerment. And I think other leaders have too. There are times to make decisions. There are times where you are in charge. Absolutely. But, you know, making your client the most important person in the room, making your employee the most important person in the room, I think there's a lot of value there.
So you are an instructor at Emory University as well. And I believe you talk about the convergence of technology, sports,
and media.
And media, that's right. So talk to us a little bit about that. I find it very fascinating. And by the way, we are big March Madness fans in this office. So it gets brutal in March around here.
You know, being able to go back to Emory as an instructor, it's not a huge course. I'm not a professor. Like, I respect actual professors and what they do. Last fall, I taught 5 sessions, 2 hours each with some undergrad business students. And when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to teach, I proposed what I know, the convergence of sports media and technology and what it means for career navigation.
Wow.
And so in that course, I walk people through the methodology I use with my clients, understanding the sports industry landscape, where you might want to work in that landscape, how you go about that from a exploration standpoint, networking, articulation, activation, right? These are the stages I work through. And so I just use practical exercises with them. My thought is they get lectured to all the time. And this class was not going to be that. This was very interactive, very engaging. It was basically a workshop where people at the end of it had tangible tools to navigate their own careers now and in the future. They can go back to those tools and frameworks. So I really love the opportunity. Having a group of 15 students in a room was the closest thing to managing a team since I had left corporate. I really missed that a lot. I loved leading a team. And so I love it. I'm planning on going back and doing it again. I do guest lectures whenever people ask. I just love working with students because I think there's so much potential if they're given opportunity and some tools to navigate themselves.
That is so fun. So for people that might be interested in doing that, how did you engage with Emory to get involved?
Yeah, the truth is I had stayed engaged.
That's great.
I graduated from the full-time MBA program in 2003. I had guest lectured every year or two with different professors who invited me back, and I said yes. I went back and judged the marketing strategy competition or Goizueta Impact every year. So I was around. And then when I saw an opportunity, when I put in my course proposal, I had a few people I could list as references because they knew I had already spoken in their class. They knew what I could do. And I think that probably put me over the top. And hopefully my course is relevant enough. I got great feedback from the course. So I'm really happy about that. And I just would love to keep doing it.
So you mentioned something about you've been lucky. And I was just listening to a podcast the other day of a CEO of a company that they'd sold a business, and he talked about luck and timing. But I've got to tell you, I want to think about the other side of that. I still see, when I see people that are lucky, I still also see resolve, dedication. I see them doing the same thing again and again and not giving up. Like, I think that there's got to be something around your perseverance and your commitment to all of those things as well. Like, I think there's certain attributes that lead to your success. I just felt like I wanted to say that because I don't.
I want to say something back.
Yes, I want to hear. I want to hear.
I don't take compliments well, and I don't think I'm going to this time either. I know I work hard. But when I say lucky, I could also use the words fortunate or privileged. And I think I had a lot of advantages. I think my family supported me. I think I had role models. I think I wasn't in tons of student debt, so I could take an unpaid internship in sports. When I got into the opportunity, did I work hard? Yes. I got that work ethic from my parents. But not everybody can take that unpaid internship. Not everybody feels comfortable asking for the stretch assignment. And not everybody has advocates or allies that are void of unconscious bias about you. So we're on a Women in Leadership podcast. I think we have to talk about that. And that's the reality is I had advantages. I feel like I took advantage of them. And I really feel strongly about giving back in this new mode in relation to that to some degree.
How do people, men, women, or other, how do they get better about asking to get a voice in that room?
It really is something I haven't figured out yet, but I've asked a lot of people, why is it so hard to ask for help? And it just is. Right. Another one of these facts. It just is. And the answers I've gotten back from people, I'll see if I can filter for women, although I don't think it matters. I was brought up not to. I am shamed when I ask for help. I had nobody to ask for help, right? Those are very real.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's one of the distinctions I sort of found in myself is I was taught that asking for help is a strength. And I apparently got that reinforcement when I did it. Yeah. And so I do those half hour, 20 minute free calls for that reason, because I think if somebody's willing to raise their hand and show up, that took a lot. It took a lot of vulnerability. It took a lot of humility. It's not their favorite day when they have to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And so once they've done that, I feel like the rest is up to me in terms of trying to find a way to help them, whether it's with me or other tools and resources or other people that they might want to work with.
That's very well said. Let me ask you now, this is just fun, because I like to talk to people. We are on Riding the Big Wheel, mm-hmm. after all.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about, you know, a big wheel moment, when I think about Riding the Big Wheel, you know, Scott, I the podcast is named that way because I was at a lot of people know this story, but I was speaking at a conference, and it was an AI conference, and they asked if I would be game to be on a panel, and I said, sure. And they asked me what one of my favorite childhood memories were. And I said, riding my big wheel. I don't even know where that came from, but that's what came out. And so during the break, I run over and I call my podcast person back here in Atlanta. And I said, I've got the name for the podcast. And when I thought about it, I thought about, you know, when I got on my big wheel, and I'm probably six, you know, but I still remember this. It was like scary. It was exhilarating. It was new. It was a little different every time. I'm taking hills, right? Gravel under my feet. I'm feeling like really dangerous. I might peel out. But I got back up and I did it again. And I remember, you know, I have a jingle that my business partner's daughter created for me. And we talk about, you know, she's got in there, she asked me to describe what it was like riding a big wheel. Wind in my hair and riding towards the unknown and all this really fun stuff. So big wheel moments are those things where, you know, something happened, it caused a change in your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be big, it could be small, but it shifted something. And I'd love you to share with us just maybe
yeah.
a big wheel moment in
yeah.
yours.
I love that metaphor. And I definitely had a big wheel, and we had a steep driveway.
Yeah.
So going down that driveway and then up our neighbor's steep driveway the other way to see how far you could get. Absolutely remember that. It's like
so fun,
yeah,
right?
Physiological
yeah.
Memory. The one I think is most appropriate was my junior year in high school. Mm-hmm. And I had an English teacher named Mr. West, and he always fostered creativity, inspiration, just sort of believed in, you know, that human capacity to dream. He drew a diagram on the board that I'm still using in part today in my practice. And it was two circles. What I came to understand was a Venn diagram eventually. And the first circle he labeled vocation. And the second circle he labeled avocation or hobby. And at whatever point in my adolescence, I saw that intersection, I was like, wait, I can do something as a career that I also enjoy. And mm-hmm. that was right around the time I made my college visit to Michigan, learned about the sports management major, and that was it. That
wow.
really inspired me. And it's what I want for my clients to at least consider the mm-hmm. possibility of that intersection. It's not for everybody. People have jobs, they get their fulfillment somewhere else, but at least that possibility of helping people define and achieve their dreams is really what I want for people.
Boy, that is so incredible. I bet that teacher would be so proud, because I know they always must be wondering
yeah.
about, you know,
yeah.
the impact that they've had.
Yep.
You know, I have moments like that
yeah.
with teachers as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, teachers are the best. My yeah. brother works in education. I just think they're totally underrated
they really
in the impact
are.
They have on your life.
They are. Well, I have so enjoyed our conversation today. And Scott, I would love for you to tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Thank you. LinkedIn, number one. Okay. I live on LinkedIn. I'm a career coach. I learn from LinkedIn. I publish on LinkedIn. So just look for Scott Doyne there or doyneservices.com.
Okay.
My website.
That's Scott Doyne, D-O-Y-N-E. Mm-hmm. We'll also have something in the podcast notes as well for people to get a hold of you. And it was such a pleasure. I sincerely appreciate it. And I really did learn some things from you here today. So thank you for coming.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, it's Michelle. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoy our podcast and know someone who you believe would make a great guest, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's talk. I'd love to hear your feedback. And as always, may it inspire you in your own personal and professional journey of life.